La 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 la.
If you want to hear your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. They talk megabytes to petabytes, and cover it all. They're the Gizmo Sapiens. They're the Gizmo Sapiens.
Welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 94. I'm Chris, and with me today is James and Paul.
Howdy.
Hello.
Well, it's been a while. I think we skipped the whole month of October. Not intentionally. We did actually try to record a podcast, and it didn't work. So we ran out of time, and we moved on to the next available date. But in a way, it's better that it happened anyway, because, you know, we ended up having a rash of
interesting announcements and releases and all sorts of news.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess to start with, the first thing that happened was Windows 8.1
yes.
got released, which I believe Windows 8 is a pretty decent tablet OS. I mean, it's...
Yes, if it stays on the tablet, I'm happy.
You know, it works well. It's functional. But the desktop part of it was really kind of non-functional, and it was kludgy how it was kind of added on to
a desktop OS.
Yeah, a desktop OS. And, you know, the fact that there was no start menu and that you had to hit a button on the tablet OS, which was really uncomfortable with a mouse or a trackpad to get to a, you know, the desktop, and then it didn't make a whole lot of sense for Office, which Outlook has got some touch features enabled into it, but largely Office stayed as a desktop application that was supposed to run on all these Windows tablets, and that was supposed to be the killer app.
Well, the Metro UI was the gateway to their normal OS.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's how they were thinking about it, but everybody was already introduced to the normal desktop. And, you know, snapping one interface on top of the other made for a very inconsistent experience.
Yeah, well, it became modal.
Yeah, true.
You know, and although...
With no real training of how to use it.
Well, that was the other thing. You know, people expect to see the start menu, and there was no start menu.
Yeah, they've trained us since, what, Windows 95 to look in the lower left corner for, you know, something that lists all our programs. And now, whoop, it's all gone, and all the people you've trained were... Well, some of us are old farts and aren't used to looking elsewhere. Now, I run Windows 8 at the house, and am I getting used to it? Yes. Do I still get annoyed with it? Yeah. Does the Windows button in the corner on 8.1 improve things? A little bit. At least I have a visual cue.
Yeah.
Evidently, there was always a little button in that very lower left-hand corner by default, that if you click there, you would get back to your, you know, programs. But it wasn't really well mentioned or noticed. Maybe I missed it when I did the initial install, but I didn't see any startup training going, hey, by the way, this is how we're thinking this should work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's some inconsistencies with the way Microsoft thought about this. Like swiping in this direction or that direction brings up a charm bar, and you know, but it, you know, they never provided training to go, hey, this is what brings up this charm bar, or, and there's no indication that the charm bars exist unless you know that they're there,
right?
Which, and I think that kind of falls under that. Now with 8.1, what I think was important was that for desktop users and laptop users who are using a trackpad and a keyboard without a touch screen. You know, the ability to log into the desktop, I can, when I hit the start button, I can either get a list of all my apps or I can get the Metro menu, which then I can flip up and get the list of all my apps. I think that was pretty important. Probably something they should have considered when they released it, because, my God, don't they do...
usability testing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I have found interesting lately, speaking with other users, somebody introduced me to the classic UI option, and it's not built in. It's evidently a theme that you can purchase for a nominal fee. I don't know what it is, and I'm not shilling for them, trust me. But if you really, really need to have the old start menu back, there are alternatives to just what Microsoft's provided.
Yeah, I think Starduck offers one. And
yeah, there's multiple ways to get about it. But if you really want that older Windows 7 feel, they have actually themes for whatever. If you want it to look like XP or 7 or whatever, you can make it look that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I run Surface devices for my Windows machines most of the time anyway, so having the, you know, the combination of the touchscreen and the additions of 8.1 make using the desktop at least a little more functional to me, you know, with the keyboard covers and stuff that are available. You know, I still, again, it's still modal to a large degree, because having a touch-enabled screen does me very little good when you're using a desktop-only type application, like most of Office, you know. And what I don't understand about it is they offer OneNote. As they have two versions of OneNote. You have the OneNote 2013, which is a desktop app, and then they have the OneNote for Windows 8, which is a touch-enabled app. Why they couldn't get their brains wrapped around doing them all together, you know.
Maybe they had the problem when the rest of us did, but anyway.
So we had Windows 8.1 that came out. I do highly, anybody who has Windows 8, please upgrade to 8.1. I think you'll be much happier. That's my recommendation.
I would agree.
We had iOS 7 come out, which was phenomenal. I know all the Android guys out there are like, well, we had that thing there for like 2 years. But, you know, it's nice and some, you know, like to be able to pop up things without having to log in. You know, like your flashlight and those types of things. But could I live without that one piece of feature? Yeah, probably, because I don't use it a whole lot on my Android devices. I probably use it much more on my iOS devices.
Yeah, overall, I was happy that, you know, we had a visual change.
Yeah.
Like you said, there are folks that are going to gripe either way, you know, that they changed it or they didn't change that. But overall, I've enjoyed what they gave us. Now, we were just discussing this, did make some of the older devices a little bit more sluggish. Like, my reference was an iPad 2. It became, it was still usable, don't get me wrong, but I noticed, especially when I was typing, I had to wait for the iPad to catch up, and I had never had to do that before.
Yeah, well, I have no reference on that, because I don't have any devices that old that I use, but...
Oh, lucky you.
Well, everybody knows I'm a tech junkie, so if there's something new comes out, I'm going to own it.
Yes, folks, he is not lying about that.
Particularly if it's cheap.
Even if it's not cheap.
But what I thought was hilarious were all the people going, do not upgrade. And then they were like, well, where's this feature? I've been reading about this feature, like iTunes Radio. Which I think is phenomenal. I use iTunes Radio a lot, and I used Pandora a lot before that. But I just find, I don't know if it's, Pandora repeats a lot of music. And there's a common problem. If you create a radio station on any of these radio apps, and then you start going, I don't want to hear that song, and I don't like that artist, and I don't like this, all of a sudden, all you're going to hear is repeats. And but I noticed that when you had a pretty liberal playlist created between a Pandora and iTunes Radio, and you set them both to the discovery mode where you're going to find artists that are close or have similar music types, iTunes Radio very rarely repeats. And it's only if you get on a subgenre of music
or something. There's a good reason for that, too. I mean, Apple has a gigantic database of artists because of the way they pay artists.
Yeah.
Right? Pandora pays royalties on the songs they play to the artist. I mean, Apple, in a sense, owns the rights to the artist they're playing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was something
so
like...
So, Pandora, I think, has a smaller database.
Well, Pandora has access to a few hundred thousand songs or something like that, and Apple has access to several million.
So Apple's, I mean, Apple's got them scared. I mean, they're seriously concerned.
And there was some definite things that happened immediately when iTunes Radio came out, because remember Pandora, and trying to make their business model profitable, had limited the amount of hours you could listen to Pandora for free in a month. Right. And as soon as iTunes Radio came out and they didn't have that limit, Pandora had to give up that limit again.
I was really impressed with iTunes Radio. There's one artist I listen to a lot. And yeah, I hear the same songs over and over again on Pandora. But I heard all kinds of new stuff that was similar that I liked on iTunes Radio, and stuff I'd never heard of. So it's kind of a new adventure.
Yeah.
Sit and listen to that. That was cool. Really liked it.
My wife gets annoyed with any of them because she likes to skip them or thumbs down them or don't play this artist again. And I'm like, as soon as you do that, you're just limiting that many.
Yeah.
You know, and then she goes, well, it's repeating. Well, it's because you created you almost created a Spotify station.
You're knocking cells out in a database that it's not going to look for anymore.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is kind of neat about iTunes Radio and the way it does the stations is you have the option of, when you create a pretty generic station, to have it only play the top, like anything that was in the top, you know, on the charts.
Oh, really?
Or you can put it in discovery mode, and there's a middle mode too, discovery mode, where it will go out and it will find related artists but not that artist. And it does a pretty good job of relating all that together. And, you know, a lot of it is based upon the data Apple has been able to collect over the years from iTunes buyers, who's buying what with this, the whole Genius Mix.
Yeah, one of the coolest things I've always liked about Apple is if I like a certain artist is going on to the iTunes store and saying, and it were that little list of similar artists. I use that so much to find out new music.
You know? Yeah.
It's like, oh, let's see who else plays this type of music.
Of course, that's when you go out to Pirate Bay and, hey, you have this? No. Paul wouldn't do that.
No, it's great at relating music. I think they've got the potential to wipe them out if they wanted to. I don't see it being pushed, though. So,
well, Apple does iTunes Radio to sell more music. Okay, you know, if you watch it on your phone, you watch it within iTunes. There's a link at the top.
And to help and sell devices, says, too.
Yeah.
I mean, really helpful,
it says,
right?
99 cents for this song, $1.29 for this song. Well, the Pandora radio, this is what I've figured out with Pandora, because they pay for the free with ads, which Apple does, too. But, you know, they have the premium subscription. I don't know how, they don't provide any subscription numbers. I want to know how many people pay for the premium, where they're essentially, you know, paying the royalties directly and an operating profit for Pandora.
Or Spotify.
Yeah, because, Spotify is different, though. You know, Spotify is almost a music rental service.
Yeah, you kind of own that music as long as you want, right? As long as you pay for it, right?
Well, as long as you have a subscription, you have access to it.
Right? Really like,
you know,
that.
You create a playlist, and that service is, I can understand their business model, because their business model is built upon, okay, you're renting the music that we have rights to.
And you can have it anytime you want.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's very, this is my cost for the royalties that I'm paying the record companies. This is my, you know, this is what I need to have in margin. So this is what translates into what I'm paying for. And then there, you can play it online or offline, because it caches to your device through the Spotify app and all of this stuff. Their model to me makes sense. The Pandora model, I don't understand. I know why Apple does iTunes Radio. That's to sell more music at the end of the day, and they make up for
the free service. They throw that right up at you every time you listen to something. Buy it. Here you can buy it right one click. Right.
You know, you hear that with the, but they do have ads, and their ads have been all high dollar ads. It's all been Nissan and McDonald's and, you know, real advertisers. And a lot of Pandora's ads are for Pandora.
Yeah.
Buy Pandora premium service.
But you wonder, I mean, but are they another business that just doesn't really make any money? And they're just perceived value? That's how they
exist? I mean, it's a cool idea, because it's like an internet radio station. And you know, and but on the flip side, how does Pandora make money, or what's their business model to make money going forward? Because they don't sell music, so there's no, they're not driving money
Are they publicly traded?
I don't believe so.
Oh, I don't think they're on the stock market.
But you understand what I'm saying?
How do they make a profit?
You know, radio stations make money.
Now they have ads. You know, a video will play every five songs. You'll have to watch an ad, and you get the ad pop up.
Correct,
and stuff
but
like that
is their model to make money off advertising. I think at this point that just sustains them because the number one advertisers in the world are Apple and
my guess is they don't even make a profit. You know, really. Like a lot of these other internet companies, and then their goal is to someday go public, and then they'll make money off the stock because it'll be a perceived value, you know, just like Facebook and Twitter and these other companies that don't make any money. They don't make profits, you know. It's just there are a perceived value.
I don't know.
And people invest in advertising and
I understand that, but I'm just saying Pandora, their business model. I can't wrap my head around how they plan to ever make money out of it. I'd see them sustaining themselves with ad revenue, but at the end of the day,
and they're paying them for all those songs that are being played.
I mean, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I actually thought they'd go away when they had to they were trying to renegotiate the royalties, and everybody said, "Nah, I don't think so."
But that Apple model is different because they pay those artists differently.
Well, record companies. Yeah. They pay, you know, the other thing is Apple's tied into the kind of independent distributors like CD Baby and some of these. So, you know, independent artists have an opportunity to also be played through iTunes Radio and get time in the advertising for music on, you know, the iTunes Music Store. So, you know, they don't just provide a service to the consumer to purchase. They provide a service to the artists and the distribution companies that we like laughingly call record companies to advertise and disseminate their product. And that's what I'm trying to figure out what Pandora does, because Pandora disseminates product and then
turns around and pays back to the artist.
Yep. So, well, moving on from there, what else came up? So we had OS X Mavericks came out.
Yep.
Which it's a good update. The battery life on my MacBook Pro did see a definite increase.
Really?
I won't say I'm getting like 3 extra hours, but I'm definitely getting an extra hour and a half out of my battery every day. And like, we worked late last night, so when I never got my laptop out at home, I put it in my bag, and it only had like 30% on it, and it still had 30% when I opened it this morning, as opposed to 20% or 25%, you know, something where you'd expect it to have some drop over time.
I have noticed that some developers have been updating their apps to, take advantage of all the app napping and the new APIs, because they're actually profiling their stuff and seeing, we're being in power hog here.
Yep.
So that's been a nice bonus. Now, there have been some smaller issues. Like yesterday, they patched the Mail app, which you don't use, but I do.
Oh, I use the Mail app.
Oh, you do?
It's my favorite app.
But there was some obvious issues with Gmail.
Yeah, it was mostly Gmail.
Yeah. Mainly, I have the one-time password and two-step verification set up, and it was forgetting that one-time password sometimes. And so you either, technically you're not supposed to keep it like in a password manager or anything like that, so you would have to go regenerate a new one-time password and reinstall it and get it to work the way it should. And so far, it seems okay to me, but I'm still going to hold judgment for another day or two.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had any real issues. I guess the biggest thing, besides just all the improvements that they made to Mavericks, is that Apple said, you know, if you're running Snow Leopard or Lion or Mountain Lion, it's free. And not only is it free, but iLife is free, and so is iWork if you already own iWork. And they made updates to all those products so that they could take advantage.
iLife is free if you don't, it didn't have it before?
Yes.
With purchase of a particular device. You know, if you buy a new laptop, you get iLife free and iWork free.
But you get the updates for free.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And if you buy a new iOS device, one of the first things it does after you do your basic setup is, hey, you've got all these free applications available from Apple. Would you like to download them? Otherwise, we're just going to add them to your account. If you want them, you can have them later.
Yeah. But, like, I got the updates for all of iLife and all of iWork for free. And I even, my iWork 2009 was actually purchased on disk and not downloaded from the App Store. So they took care of everybody who originally purchased it as a physical media. And I was pretty impressed with that. And, you know, at least so far, the concept is that those updates are going to be gratis from Apple. Now, the cost of that development stuff buried into the margins and the and what they sell their machines for, they can probably afford it. But it does give them a distinct differentiator versus, like, Microsoft.
Well, I find it interesting. It used to be when you went and bought a computer, you got some basic core applications provided for free. I mean, admittedly, this has been some time ago. Then it got into shovelware, where you had to, you know, almost wipe and load the box before it was usable. And then maybe you could, you know, download or reload some of those off of the CD at the time. But it's interesting to watch them go back to that and say, you know, this is a nice incentive to have. When you purchase a machine, you know, there's some initial cost there, obviously. Now you get a lot of good, decent software. It may not be what you're used to, but hey, it's pretty good, and it's going to be there right away, and that lessens the overall cost of the experience.
Well, and it's not only that, you know, they're, Microsoft's doing that to some degree with the RT devices, because you get Microsoft Office on the RT for free, and that's 2013 with PowerPoint, Word, Excel, and Outlook. And the Outlook is not the dummy version. This Outlook actually has Exchange support. You know, I think Apple, and you get iLife and iWork all on the iPad and the iPhone as well. Now, I believe Apple has it's taken them a long time. They struggled with .Mac and MobileMe and you know, now they're iCloud. But, you know, the Notes app on Mavericks and the Notes app on iOS 7 and even Mountain Lion and iOS 6 on any iOS or Mac syncs to iCloud. So do all your documents on iWork. And my kids, that's what they do. And now that Apple has created a web version of iWork, you know, now you're getting, you know,
you can really have collaboration without spending a ton of money.
Correct. You know, and that's the ecosystem we have. You know, if you're on Android, it doesn't fly as well on the whole Android ecosystem, only because there's no... they're saying their analog to Mac OS X or Windows is Chrome OS, which to some degree it is, but there's just a lot you can't do on Chrome OS. But, you know, if you have an Android device and you have a Chrome device, you could do the same thing with Google Docs and Gmail and G Drive. You know, and the problem is this is where Microsoft's lag behind. They have SkyDrive and they have all of these things, but by default, it is much more convoluted the way you move your data back and forth to these cloud drives, as opposed to iCloud and iWork and Google Docs and G Drive and what they have. And so, you know, everybody's got their own ecosystem here that they're trying to build out. And I think that's where giving the thick clients is a way is providing value to drive those cloud services they're trying to develop.
And I think they're giving away the OS update is another way of pushing their technology forward. I think the more people they have, you know, on a more modern operating system, the more they can do later on.
Exactly.
And getting those frameworks in position is key. And rather than saying, oh, well, these frameworks for this kind of work or this kind of development is only available if you have the absolute latest, and we need to charge you for that, sticks in the craw.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think what it is so Google and Apple are also looking at it and going, because, you know, they're also giving, lately, ever since iWork became free, on Android devices, QuickOffice is now free.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to get a thick client that you don't need to be online necessarily to get all that work done.
So I think the way we need to think about this as consumers is we may not be paying money for it. What are we paying?
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever you do something for free, they're getting something from you. And that's it's your data, but I'm not talking about what you've created, but they're looking at your work habits and your advertising and all that.
What I think a lot of it, though, is in response to Microsoft. Because on Windows x86 machines or x64 machines, you still got to buy Office, regardless, whether it's home and student or whatever. And so,
I don't.
and that was always the.
I'm just gone without it.
Yeah, but I mean that's the bread and butter for Microsoft. That's where they really made a lot of their money. And so, how do you neutralize that? Because that's considered the killer app. Well, one, you build, you know, and I think it's been a vision for a while, with both Google Docs and iWork from Apple, and that is we build our own Office suite. It may not do 100% of what Microsoft Office does, but people only use 30% of what Microsoft Office does. And we put it out there and we give it away for free, so the perceived value is greater.
Right. Well, I think also at its core, Microsoft is, from a revenue generation point of view, they're a software company. Apple is kind of more of a combination of hardware and software. They want you to sell you that entire experience. So they know they're going to make some money off the hardware first, so they can kind of take the hit on the software a little bit. Microsoft, like you said, for years and years, it's been the OS and Office and maybe some infrastructure stuff, but that's enterprise-y and not consumer. And then Google is a platform, you know, where they are software, but they own the hardware and provide you the software via their browsers or their Chromebooks, which is still a browser. But.
It's a browser with a file manager. I read that somewhere. Somebody, you're like, you know, Chrome OS is, it's the OS is the browser with a relatively decent file manager added in. And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I think Chrome OS devices are neat. My biggest issue right now with Chrome is it is the most invasive web browser on any platform to deal with. It wants to run all these background services and all these things, and so I don't even have Chrome installed on my Windows or my Mac machines anymore. The only place I use Chrome is on my Android machine.
I use Chrome exclusively. It's quick. It's fast.
So let's see what else happened. Google Nexus 5.
The Nexus 5 came out. Adam, who's not on the podcast.
Today,
ordered his, like 2 minutes after they were announced. And he had it, and he's trying to sell his Nexus 4 for almost as much as he paid for his Nexus 5. And that was an interesting discussion on Facebook.
Oh, I'm sure it was calm and rational.
Oh, it was. Well, because I offered him one. I think I offered him $100 for it. I said, I'll take it for $100. And he's like, I get $200. And I said, your cell phone is dirtier than your toilet. So it'd be like holding your toilet up to my face. Why am I going to pay $200 for that? And he goes, it's because you like it. And I said, yeah, but I can go to the bar and put my face on any toilet for free.
Wow. Our podcast just keeps getting classier. More and more classy.
Well, right? I had to talk in Edgewood type terms. So you'd understand.
Okay.
Other than, you know, KitKat it's just a bigger, badder version of the Nexus line.
And for some folks, that's what they want.
Yeah. So. I was looking, the only criticism I've read about the Nexus 5, and I haven't been able to touch one and play with it and see, is that the camera is, there's been no upgrade to the camera between the 4 and the 5. And that in some instances, because the aperture is bigger on the Nexus 5 camera, because they tried to make it, the actual sensor bigger.
Right.
It takes worse pictures.
Hmm. They get washed out?
Yeah, well, they get blurry. Hmm. If there's any motion whatsoever, it's really blurry. So I would like to investigate that a little more.
Okay.
Let's see what else.
iPad Air.
The iPad Air released.
Released. Some of us have it in their grubby little paws.
James does.
Yeah, I'm just looking right now. They're out of stock at my Target.
There's like a different 16 Target. Gig. There's like 9 million Targets in our area.
I know. Good. Just started looking. I just pulled it up.
We were discussing earlier the deal Target has going until tomorrow, which by the time you hear this probably will be expired, but you get $200 back for even an original iPad. So Paul is trying to make hay with his old iPad and at least get something out of it.
Yeah.
So.
Toss the brick.
But
I'm ready.
Yeah. Definitely an improvement in hardware. Very similar to the 5S, 64-bit. Seems to make a decent difference. It's certainly benchmark-wise from the benchmark reviewers. I've seen about a 90% difference from last year's model. And for me, who I went from an iPad 2 to an Air, it was like a 5.6x increase in speed. So I was plenty happy, namely because it was an original iPad 2 with the original processor. Once iOS 7 was added on it, typing within any kind of note-taking, there was some definite lag there. So I appreciated the upgrade.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is 5S came out. They actually shipped 5S's and 5C's.
Yep.
And Paul and I both have five S's. And the one feature, I
don't have it on me now.
I do. The other Paul, James.
You, oh, that's right. I thought you got one, too.
And my daughter has it.
Oh, she took it?
Yeah, wow. She took this one.
Rode roughshod on you.
Yeah. So.
Well, I ended up having to switch carriers to get my upgrades because AT&T sucks, by the way. that's just my unmitigated... I could actually probably prove that opinion, but I'm not going to go into like Adam. And
I'm a cheapskate, so I'm still riding on the unlimited data plan on this old 4, which is good for me because I'm off Wi-Fi so much. I'm afraid to give it up.
You won't have tethering on that plan.
Oh, really?
Uh-oh.
Not on this device?
Nope. It has to be one of their shared data plans. Hmm. But it ended up... switching to Verizon was really good. My phone bill went down by $100 a month, and I can have twice as many devices. But the killer feature I found on the iPhone 5S that I really like is the fingerprint sensor, so I don't have to put my stupid passcode in all the time. I get my iPad out, which has the passcode on it, and I'm holding my finger on the button, going, "Why aren't you taking?" Oh, wait a minute.
Stephen Fry was on Colbert Report, and evidently a friend of his taught his iPhone 5S to read his nipple as recognition point. So not that I'm recommending that, but there are certainly creative ways to unlock your phone now.
That's scary.
Yes. I'm just going to leave it there, lying out there on the table.
Let's hope it's a cold day when you do it. Could be difficult.
Once again, bringing Classy back here on Gizmo Sapiens.
So, what else? The Kindle Fire HDX came out.
Yes, it did.
Which, supposedly, I haven't seen one. Supposedly has a better screen than the iPad Air.
From what I've read, they say, yes, it's better, but our eyes can't tell us the difference. It looks about as good as a Retina display. So, I'm going to have to take their word for it. So... But let's see, that pretty much covers all the stuff that came out. well, not all of it, but what's coming up. The iPad Mini with Retina is still due to happen middle of November. That has not yet been released at the time of recording. And I think maybe Chris has his eye on one.
That's actually what I've been waiting for. It's why I didn't order an iPad Air. Because my iPad Mini had been stolen. And there's some cool things about the iPad Mini with Retina display that you didn't get on the original iPad Mini. One, you can now get it with Verizon or AT&T LTE, which is a must for me. Because not only if you don't use it, that's the only way to get the actual dedicated GPS chip. So make the Maps applications, whether it's Google Maps or Apple Maps, you know, extremely accurate instead of using triangulation.
And if you don't know Chris is a road warrior at times, so for his job, so that is very key to his desires.
But it has the same processor as the 5S and the iPad Air and everything else. So there's other than size, there's a lot less to distinguish it between its bigger brethren than it used to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I waffled a little bit, but I tend to take notes on my iPad, and I do like the keyboard being as large as it is on the Air and previous generation. And shedding a half a pound of weight and a little bit of size really made up for that, which I didn't think I would notice that much, but I'm consistently impressed that it doesn't weigh as much as it used to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I was amazed when I picked one up in the store, and I'm thinking, you know, I could see the difference in the bezel size. You know, that's really apparent. So I knew it was an iPad Air, but I'm like lifting it up, and I'm like, man, I didn't realize how light this is, because it is lighter than the original iPad Mini.
Hmm. Wow. I didn't know that.
So, you know, it's very impressive, and then with the battery life and everything else. And I do like the larger iPads, but the Mini, just being a road warrior, makes, you know, it's easier to stuff that device in with all the other devices I tend to carry.
And you have to remember that when Chris talks about all his other devices, there's probably like three tablets in that lineup, along with his laptop.
Yeah.
And his phone. So.
Yeah, you know how they show those pictures of, you know, what's in your laptop bag, or what's in your, you know, the lunch, what's in your purse? I don't know that this table that we have what is this?
You should lay it all out sometime.
A 10x4 or 10x6 conference table.
You know, like
I might take up half of that.
Like, you see those old Air Force photos of like the B-52 and all the armaments laying out? You should just lay everything out sometime.
No, because he'll never get it back in his bag.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. Servers.
Actually, I certainly...
Monitors. Yeah. Just put it all out there.
I certainly carry a lot less than I used to carry.
Hmm.
You know, it used to be the days you schlep around two or three laptops with you.
Yep. Now you take virtual machines everywhere you go.
Yep.
That'll be the next interesting step when they get virtual machines running on my tablet. Hmm.
Well, you know, and they kind of gone that far today.
I say that sort of jokingly, but I think they will do it.
They've
discussed virtualizing certain operating systems so you can enforce images and control and things like that.
Yeah. I think we'll see that, you know, definitely, you know, I guess... You know, it went from server virtualization to desktop virtualization, and now we have remote virtualization, so you have like remote desktop sessions and, you know, ZenApp and Citrix Receiver and that type of thing in the enterprise environment. but you're seeing that being offered to consumers too at home. You know, there's a couple companies who offer the use of Microsoft Office as a virtualized application on your tablets, you know, on the go, as long as you have an internet connection. But, you know, certainly you could do that with there are companies who are offering desktop operating systems that way as well. Now, what I would like to see is, you know, and I think this may be more the reality, is, you know, you'll either have same version of the OS you're running, but both versions that you're running are actually running on a bare metal hypervisor on the device. You know, one's your consumer one, and one's your work one. And right. So they want, you know, they have different policies or logged into different domains or whatever. And I can also see that, say, because enterprises don't want to support lots of different operating systems. They do today. More and more are actually becoming more heterogeneous, which is a good thing. But from a cost standpoint, you know, it costs money to have a specialist in this and this and this, and I can just hire one specialist who can do it all. I could see it where at one point you'll get companies who go, well, we're only going to support iOS devices officially. So if you want to run an Android device, you know, you have to run an iOS virtual machine on that Android device.
Right.
Or vice versa. We're only going to support Android, you know, so you have to run an Android virtual machine on that iOS device. So, well, I think we're probably about done because James is giving me it's time.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you guys. We have moved to a new provider, Podbean, so you should be able to stream this episode from iTunes directly or the podcast app because they support the variable bit rate protocol that Apple wants you to support, which our previous provider did not. But you can still reach us at www.gizmosapiens.com or send us an email or voicemail to gizmosapiens@gmail.com, GIZMOSAPIENS. And we'll see you on the digital flip side. Bye-bye.
Listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.